our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
And I don't think a guy like Kevin Gausman is who you want to look for reliability.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm joined by Johnny Bravo. How are you doing, Johnny?
Good morning, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm good.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Gary's going to be somewhere around 30 home runs. It's just he's just as likely to hit two in a month as he is to hit 12 or 13.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Prentice. I'm joined by Johnny Bravo. How are you doing, Johnny?
Good morning, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm good. Why don't you give your actual name so people don't think that we're totally going crazy on this podcast?
This is actually Easy Ev3 on Twitter, Evan Peterson, coming to you live on Sunday morning with my cup of coffee and my two boys, ready to chat some baseball.
And we're also joined by our favorite Milwaukee Brewers fan ever, Mr. Chuck Anderson. How are you doing, Chuck?
That's about the most jaded compliment ever, since I think most people know about, less than one Milwaukee Brewers fan, but I'll take it regardless. I'm doing just fine. I mean, we're showing off our versatility here on which time we decide to record this lovely podcast. So I'm a little bit hungover, but I'm doing just fine. But I do think it's going to be kind of interesting. We're going to do more of an open conversation kind of thing today. So hopefully we cover enough ground and get some good information out there. I'm at just chucking it on Twitter. So just ready to roll. Let's get this done.
And I am at BBrennisFWFB. I am called the Admiral's Alice of podcasting for our nice little group over here. That's a shout out to Justin Mason. But why don't we jump right in? We do have a listener question. It happens to be from someone on staff, but that's okay. Because they were actually very interested in what your draft strategy would be. How it would be approached if you had a roto or a head-to-head league. Exactly what changes for you, Chuck?
Well, I think in particular they were wondering what the difference is between head-to-head categories, or, you know, head-to-head roto as it's often called, and straight roto. And what's interesting is that, you know, we've sort of looked around and see that the rankings don't change very much. And that's just, it's kind of because you don't necessarily have to fill all the categories to win in a head-to-head category league. And so what you end up looking at is you can draft the best player repeatedly and think to yourself, well, if I end up a little short on stolen bases and that's the only category that I lose every week, I'm still going to be fine, which is not something you can do in roto, straight roto, because if you end up with 1 or 2 points in that category, it's going to be almost impossible to win. So I do think there's more of a difference than you would see in the rankings, for sure. I think I would I prefer a very balanced approach in my roto leagues and the head-to-head leagues. I literally will just say, okay, the first 10 rounds, I'm going to take a mix of the best player and the best pitcher available, and I'm not going to stress out about which categories they excel in. I can just take the best player. So maybe it's more of a pure form in a way of drafting the best player to me.
What about you, Mr. Evan?
Well, I have no idea who possibly could have posited this question, but I just think it's a really interesting exercise. I was kind of messing around and saw that there was a delineation on certain websites that provided custom rankings, and I don't know if the nature of playing against just one person as opposed to the field means that you can kind of swing for the fences a little bit more, or I think there's less risk in, you know, like you said, punting categories, where in overall roto, it's going to, you know, drop you down tons and tons of points. But if in head to head, you're winning 9 out of 10 categories, you're still doing, you know, fairly decent. So, since I'm the one that kind of wanted to know this, spoiler alert, I'm more interested to hear what Ben thinks, actually.
Well, for me, I like playing both types of draft formats. I don't have a personal preference. It does change my draft strategy a lot because when I am playing in a roto, I try to grab players who are more balanced throughout the five categories for hitters, and for pitchers, I try to grab people who can help me with the ratios as well as getting strikeouts and the wins. So I may tend to stay away from someone who's on, say, the Phillies, and take someone who is more, has more upside slash potential slash injury risk, but is on a better team. So like I may be more willing to take a Rich Hill in that type of situation. Not that Rich Hill and a Phillies pitcher necessarily getting drafted in the same area, but a pitcher of that nature is someone who I'm looking to grab just because I know that they can help me in so many different categories. With a head-to-head, I'm just picking the best player available and picking someone who I can actually utilize in my team, just kind of like what Chuck was saying. When you have a head-to-head, it's okay to punt a category. It's okay to punt two categories as long as you know that you're going to that you have a team that can win more than half of the categories every single week, then you're fine. Unless you're in one of those type of head-to-head leagues in which they don't do wins and losses and they actually do total category wins, then
which is what I like.
Yeah, that's why you're a weirdo. But
it's okay. I do like that format. I do like head-to-head. I'm a shit talker. You know, it's kind of goes with my nature. But I do think it's really interesting because it is, you know, playing against the entire field, per se, as opposed to just a single person. It does change things up.
I mean, I get it. Like, that's the thing. And that's why this is such a good question, because we do have people who may focus on more than one type of draft. They may focus on only one type of draft. For me, I didn't really do a ton of roto leagues until I came into Friends with Fantasy Benefits, and then a majority of the leagues that they play in are Friends with Fantasy or are roto. So because of that, I've been able to start seeing the pros and cons to it, and there's definitely a lot more to like about roto because it takes you building a team for an entire year, and it really takes you being the best overall owner to try to win, because you have to do so many things as opposed to a head-to-head where you may not really need to change up your team that much during the course of the year if you have a team that is going to be winning stolen bases, home runs, and RBIs every single week, and then winning four of the five pitching categories. You really may not need to change a lot during your team. So it really just depends on what personal preferences you have.
Well, I'm the guy who I play very little head-to-head. I think I've played in under five head-to-head leagues in my entire life. And ironically, I think I've won four of the five head-to-head leagues that I've ever been in, and I still strongly prefer roto. And it's weird because it's just, I'm the guy who always finishes first, second, or third in all of my football leagues in points scored and rarely makes the playoffs. And so I just refuse to kind of have that sort of frustration for most of the year, you know, because the one thing about head-to-head to me is that if your team plays really good, but you play against a team that's ultra hot and you lose like 8 out of 10 categories and that's how you're keeping score, you know, you went 2-8 for the week, then really you get no value out of how well your players played. And it's not a preference of mine. I very strongly prefer roto.
Anything else to add, Evan?
No, I mean, I just think it's fun to, you know, kind of have these conversations and, you know, ask those questions.
I mean, I think for our listeners, it's a very good conversation to have because there are people who want to know what changing and strategy would actually happen between the two different types of drafts. And there may be a listener who hasn't done a specific type of roto league or doesn't do much head-to-head, and being able to find out this, that, you know, you may be able to go best player available no matter what in a head-to-head is more helpful because maybe they weren't anticipating it that way. Guys, why don't we jump into the next segment that we have, and that's going to be talking about the Friends with Fantasy Benefits staff league that we have, and it's not really an entire staff. We really actually only have half of the league filled with staff members, and then the other half are listeners and friends of Fantasy, friends of the podcast, basically, that wanted to be in. And we want to talk about three, I'm forgetting my words. What am I supposed to say?
Three massive takeaways that we've gotten from the first, basically the first 10 rounds of the draft.
Exactly. And, who we like, which team we like better, than our own, basically. So, Chuck, why don't you start us off with, a couple of your surprises, you would say.
Well, the first thing I want to mention is that we decided that we were going to go with OBP instead of batting average, and that we were going to go with quality starts.
Over wins,
which is kind of an extension of the last conversation we had about the, you know, different draft types and how it affects your draft strategy. I mean, I definitely noticed that it seemed like there were certain positions that really benefited, that you really looked at and you said, oh, this, you know, this position got even stronger because we were using OBP versus, you know, other positions that I thought got weaker. For example, I think the outfield in general got weaker when we used OBP, and first base got stronger. The top tier of first baseman, all of a sudden, Joey Votto looks even better. All of a sudden, Freddie Freeman, who had a 400 OBP, who hasn't had less than a 385 OBP in the last 3 years, all of a sudden, these guys look even more attractive at the start of the draft. And, you know, there just is not as much depth in the outfield. And we've already commented a 16-team league with five outfielders. That's 80 outfielders. And so it's really... it's hard to see big OBP upside in the outfield, even once you got to the middle of the second round. That was one of my big takes. And, you know, the other big take that I have is that a ton of first basemen went in the first round in this league. Four in a row went at one time. And then I decided that I had to take a first baseman in the second round with the 17th pick. So I took Freddie Freeman, and I debated back and forth about Freeman or Daniel Murphy, because everyone knows I like position flexibility on top of it. And anyway, then somewhere out of nowhere, Daniel Murphy lasted to me until pick 47, which I thought was one of the biggest shockers of the draft, seeing as how Gregory Polanco, whose ADP is 63, by the way, went right in front of him. And Jose Abreu, whose ADP is 62, went like seven picks in front of pick 47. So Abreu went at 40. Gregory Polanco went at 46, and Daniel Murphy went at 47, and that really surprised me a great deal. So those are the first two things that I'd want to sort of hear what you guys think. You think OBP affected the draft as much as I do?
I mean, for me, it definitely did, because I forgot we were doing OBP for half the draft, and I didn't pick players based on OBP. I kept picking players. Like, I would never have, like, picking Machado at 9 is not a bad spot. But I wouldn't have picked Machado at 9 over other players such as like an Anthony Rizzo or a Miguel Cabrera or a couple other people because of OBP. Machado isn't as helpful in an OBP league as some of those other players. And for me, it kind of screwed things up because of that. And then in terms of quality starts, there was players that I passed on because I kept thinking that it was win. So I passed on players as a result of that. Not thinking that it was really that big of a deal, just because I hadn't actually been thinking about it at the time. So I passed on a couple of pitchers, and then I went and took a JT Realmuto, which is fine in an OBP, but I took him based on his average, thinking that his average was what was playing, not the OBP, and I could have taken a couple other catchers, or I could have waited. So it kind of threw me off there. So for me, it definitely has affected people, especially with some of the other players who have fallen. What about you, Evan?
Well, I mean, I think people may look at the, you know, 18 price tag on Freddie Freeman and go, whoa, way too high. But in reality, he wasn't going to come back to you if you wanted him in the second round and you needed a first baseman. Like, that was just what you had to pay. So I think there's a lot of that that goes into, like, when people interpret NFBC rankings and they think, like, whoa, 32nd overall, you know, that's, like, you know, round four, when it's no, that's your second or third round pick. You know, it's just what preference you have them at. I was surprised that a lot of these first basemen did last as long. Even though Bryce Harper is a great OBP pick, I was really shocked at how high he actually went. Maybe that's just me. And yeah, it was really interesting to kind of watch that happen.
Well, that goes along when we're talking about first baseman, that goes along with the fact that there, I think we all believe that Matt Carpenter taking Paul Goldschmidt at pick number three.
Wait, Matt
Carpenter was a great pick.
In our draft?
Matt Thompson, who took Matt Carpenter with his next pick, by the way. But anyway, Matt Thompson, you know, taking Goldschmidt at three, and he took a lot of flack in the draft room for doing that. And we get to vote if it's a good or a bad pick, and the bad pick sort of thing sort of piled up on him. I think people were just having fun with him. But, you know, that sort of told you that this draft was going to be a little bit first base crazy. And within the within it being first base crazy, it still absolutely stuns me that Abreu, it's hard for me to imagine Abreu going ahead of Daniel Murphy. It's And their ADPs on NFBC say that that's something that shouldn't happen.
I mean, to me, I was willing to pick Murphy because I'm a big fan of Murphy as a Mets fan, and I was so happy. Like, he went to the Nationals, I had no issues with him at all. I actually wanted to grab him, but because we're playing in a format that has five outfielders instead of three, I really wanted to be able to get a second legitimate outfielder, someone who I consider a top 12 outfielder, and I wanted to be able to get a second one. So as a result of that, I had not taken Daniel Murphy because I was like, there's other first basemen later that, while I do not like nearly as much, I am still satisfied with being able to grab one of those, but there's not as many top-tier outfielders I would be happy with that will be able to help me as much in the roto overall standings. I felt that me grabbing a pool host later, while it doesn't help as much in OBP, could help me with the RBIs and the home runs more than what Murphy was, but obviously with the runs, it's not going to help me as much, but stolen bases is definitely not going to help me, but it's not like Murphy gets a ton. So that's why I was willing to do something like that. But Murphy slid a lot farther than I expected. I don't know why a lot of other owners passed on him. He definitely got great value on that one.
Well you know, it's real quick. Go ahead.
I just want to interject real quick because what happened was me and Ben participated in this big outfield run that happened. And I honestly thought, even though Matt had taken Carpenter at 30, I know he's high on Daniel Murphy. I thought he was going to take him at 35 where he took Story. Then what happened was in the next, 10 picks or whatever until Daniel Murphy went, there was, you know, eight outfielders that went in Ryan Braun, Springer, Hamilton, Desmond. Ben took JD Martinez, AJ Pollock, and Stanton and Polanco went. Like, there's a huge run that went in there that just slid Murphy back. So I wonder if what Chuck was talking about, you know, outfield thinning out really quick up top, if that had anything to do with Daniel Murphy sliding.
I think there was a bunch of different factors that helped that had Murphy slide, because while Matt Carpenter is a really, really good on-base percentage guy, and I can see him being an early player, for me, Will Myers going over
Murphy?
Over Murphy was a shock. Abreu going over Murphy was a shock. There's a bunch of other players that had gone over Murphy that I just would not have anticipate. And yes, I understand people wanted to be able to get in on that outfield run that Evan started and that I kept going, because Justin was the one who broke it up with an Abreu pick. We had six out of seven picks and then seven out of nine picks that were outfielders. And for that run, that's a massive run in a 16-team league. But that still doesn't really excuse the players that went earlier in a Matt Carpenter and a Will Myers. I'm surprised that both of them pretty much went over Murphy, and that Murphy then slid another 16 picks as a result. So,
and the other thing to comment about the outfielder run is, you know, one of the oldest mantras that you hear in fantasy baseball is not to play into a run. So that Gregory Polanco pick, the first thing you have to wonder is, okay, he's picking at pick 14, you know, so he's only got like six more picks. So is it really that likely that a guy whose ADP is 63 is going to go between, you know, between those six picks? And if he takes the next outfielder after Polanco, which I'll be curious to see who it was, is he really going to lose that much? I mean, Polanco was pretty dinged up last year, but Polanco, you're talking about a guy, he hit 258 with a 323 on base percentage last year, and he only had a 463 slugging. I mean, that is miles. He's like 100 batting average points behind Daniel Murphy almost. He's 60 OBP points behind, and he's 130 slugging points behind. Those are pretty massive differences. So I think that's kind of what played in. You know, the run happened, and people were not willing to cut off the run in the middle of it for the various reasons that we spoke of. But then you turn out at the end of that run, you turn out really not getting good value for your pick there either. You know, within my assessment of it, and I'm peeking at the draft right now, so I'll be able to tell you exactly who the other the next outfielder was. Yoenis Cespedes.
That was by me.
Yeah, that's. I thought that was a great pick there. But Cespedes and Yelich, you got to wonder. Cespedes, Yelich, and Polanco. I don't know. There's an equal chance that, you know, that either Yelich or Polanco are the worst of those three picks, and that you're talking about a 15 pick swing. So he certainly could have gotten one of those guys there. I bet he could have gotten Polanco on the way back.
I don't think there's that much of a drop off. Sorry for swearing, by the way. Dexter Fowler just went and I had him wind up. So oh. I was pissed. Hey, real quick, since we have like an on air breaking news moment, Ben, would you like to discuss your Jay Hat pick at 152?
Yeah, I finally remembered it's a quality start league. I was thinking there was a couple other pitchers who I was thinking between that are younger and with a lot more strikeout potential, like a Vince Velasquez, basically, and a Carlos Rodon. Not that that means for you guys to snipe me on either of them, but they're so capable of getting quality starts, and I'm not sure how much progress like a Velasquez or a Rodon will make from last year to this year, considering the status of the teams and that they didn't really do anything to upgrade the catcher. Like, that was one of Rodon's biggest issues last year, is that he 2 years ago with Flowers there, he had a great pitch framer and he had a guy who was able to call his game fantastic. And you could see the ERA difference between him and when he had other catchers in the game. And it negatively affected him last year because he didn't have Flowers. And as a result, he had higher ERAs. He had some stretches of games in which he did fine, but I'm not sure if he is able to take the next step this year, or if that's something that will come when they try to start winning again, maybe in a year or two, because he is still young. Or a Velasquez, who has some upside, but he's also got injury risk. So for me, going with J. Happ, who's been healthier, who gets a ton of quality starts, who still gets strikeouts and keeps the ratios relatively down, that was where I felt was my safest pick, considering that I have Syndergaard and DeGrom as my other two options. I wanted to have a little more stability, and rather than just going total risk when it's a nine pitcher count, and I'm kind of punting saves at this point.
Well, it's curious because I had my third point that I had written down was that it's really changed over time what there is for pitching depth. And part of it, to me, is that there used to be these kind of stalwart guys, these inning eaters that weren't going to hurt you, that were pretty decent all over the league, and they seem to have vanished. You know, the Jason Vargas, you know, Doug Fister, C.J. Wilson for a couple of years. These guys, you could be like, okay, well, I'm going to get this guy, and, you know, he's going to be okay or whatever. But now what you get is you have to take – when you get so deep in pitching, you have to take really old-time guys like Colon and CC Sabathia, or you have to take relative unknowns, you know, like Tyler Skaggs or a really flawed pitcher like Pineda or Robbie Ray. So there just seems to be that lack of middle-tier depth that we used to have in fantasy baseball, and I think that's what you're getting to, because Jay Happ is one of the few guys that you look at, and he's one of those old school types where, you know, he's not going to be the flashiest pitcher by any means, but at the same time, he's a guy who gets through that 6 or 7 inning plateau almost every single time he's out there, and he usually gives up right around those 2 or 3 runs. So in this quality start format, that makes a lot of sense. So within what I see left at pitching, and my comment on pitching depth definitely goes to, you know, we're in round 10 of a league, and, you know, you got guys with very little track record. You know, these, Kevin Gausman and Jameson Taillon, Jonathan Gray, Steven Matz never on the mound, Michael Fulmer 1 year. I mean, we're already there. You know,
the person with the most track record right now is John Lackey, and he's like the 7th rated pitcher on the board.
Yeah,
which is love John Lackey in a quality starts league,
and
so.
I do too. But
he's probably going to be on my
team.
That's
what I'm saying. We're in round 7 out of what 28 rounds. Round 10 out of 28, and yeah. Lackey is the 7th best pitcher on the board at this time. Like that,
yeah, and there's teams in the league that only have one pitcher.
I only have two. Yeah,
like I just picked my third, and we're in round 10, and I already feel like I'm already not picking enough hitters because of that. I feel I need more hitting.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting landscape right now. And like I said, there used to be all these old stalwart guys that you're like, okay, you know, I can take this guy. He's not going to be great, but he's not going to hurt me. Well, there's none of those guys anymore. Like John Lackey's the only one. When you look at our queue, that's the only guy you say to yourself, well, he's kind of like that now that Happ is gone. So now you're going to be like, you know, I'm going to take Jared Eichhoff, or, you know, I'm going to take Aaron Nola, and he's either going to be good or he's going to suck. I mean, that's what I think is so hard to navigate about the pitching landscape right now. And I think it's on full display right now in our league.
And I just want to point out that Victor Martinez just got picked up pick 154 for a spot that we only have one utility hitter. So I'm a little surprised about that one.
Did you notice that Kendrys Morales is already gone? Morales
yeah, is he able to play first base this year? In the ESPN or no?
They're not on ESPN to start the year, but they are claiming that he's going to get first base eligibility.
Which is fine, which I can wait to 10 to 15 games for him to get that, and I can place him as my utility hitter because I know he's going to play first. Victor Martinez will not end up playing first base this year because he's not going to get to 10 games. He got only 5 last year. I'm a little surprised that you pick at 154 that you pick your utility spot hitter then. Now, Victor Martinez in and of itself is still a great hitter. He gets on base. I get it. He's a good pick. I'm just a little surprised that you choose to fill up that utility spot at this time with someone who has had some injuries in the past. It's not like a David Ortiz where he's healthy all the time and you know you're getting the consistent production. He's had the last couple of years where he's had some injuries, and while he's been productive, those injuries sometimes outweigh the positives.
Yeah, and he has a few years ago, he had a chance for first base eligibility still, and now I just don't think he does. I think you're looking at someone who's going to be in your DH slot all year when he's healthy. So I agree with the criticism of that pick in and of itself. That much is for sure.
Evan, why don't you talk about some of your surprises at this point during the draft?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there was definitely a few things that I wanted to touch over. One would be Alex Bregman, who I like Bregman this year. I have some issues with the home road splits, but he went 71 overall in the fifth round. And then the third baseman who went behind him were Adrian Beltre, Anthony Rendon, Todd Frazier, Longoria. And I mean, you can throw Jose Ramirez in an OBP league in there, and I think you're still kind of talking about the same tier. I don't know that he deserves to go above all of those guys necessarily. I thought it was a little aggressive and not the gamble I would want to take. So I was just curious how you guys felt about that.
What are your thoughts, Chuck?
Well, when I looked at it, I was stunned because I went even further than Evan just went. As far as draft value is concerned, because, you know, I looked past Jose Ramirez and I said Justin Turner, Mikel Franco, Jake Lamb all basically went like, you know, a round after the pick that we're speaking of. And
I didn't scroll up. Sorry, that was my bad.
And I'm not even, you know, I'm not even convinced necessarily that Bregman's going to be better than those guys. I mean, Bregman's in a good situation being in Houston, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't be in on him at a certain point, but, you know, he jumped up to a 24% strikeout rate when he jumped up to the bigs, which he had, you know, his strikeout rate was much lower, which is some, this is a trend we're seeing in young players that are getting moved up at a very young age. The quality pitching jump is so huge that all of a sudden their strikeout rate doubles. You know, then his OBP went from 390 in the last 2 years of his minor league career to 313 last year. And everyone's going to point to that awful start or this, that, or whatever. But the point is that you're still talking about a guy that the book first got out on, and he's still going to have an adjustment period moving forward, which he may adjust smoothly and he may not. So, you know, I agreed with Evan pointing out that Alex Bregman here involved a leap of faith. There's a number of young players in the draft this year that we're going to have to do that with if you want them. And that's the only justification I see for the pick. If you really like Bregman, he pretty much had to take him here. He wasn't going to get him on the way back, which these larger leagues, this is a 16-team league, I certainly see. But other players that I see exactly like that you have to take this leap of faith in. You know, Jameson Taillon is another one. If you want Jameson Taillon, you're going to pay for him, you know, even though he doesn't have a long track record. And I think there's three or four other guys that you're really going to see. They came out last year. They look pretty good. If you want them, you're going to pay for them. You know, it starts with Trey Turner, and it's a trend throughout the first 10 or 12 rounds to me.
Benintendi also included in that conversation for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's just, once again, those guys that want to claim they were there first and, you know, they want to, I mean, it could totally pay off. It's what gamble do you want to take? I real quick, also talking about, you know, certain things that definitely stuck out in the draft. Marcus Semien went insanely early at 127, I thought. I don't know how you guys feel about his power projections going forward. Especially, I was looking it up, he had like a 28.5% hard hit rate last year. I don't know that I would project him for anything over, say, like 21.5 home runs. I was just kind of curious because I thought there were a lot of more interesting middle field options on the board.
I mean, for me, I was a little surprised. I was more surprised with, like, the Jake Lamb and all those groups that Chuck was talking about that went around after. That was one of my talking points. But I was very surprised that Bregman went as early because it's like people banking on him. And we actually did not get to see that with Trey Turner as much. I almost expected him to go earlier than it anticipated because I thought everyone would be so high on him. But people are high on Bregman, and it went a lot earlier than I had anticipated, considering that there were some other players on the board that I probably would have wanted to pick over him at that time. But, you know, that's the type of stuff that happens, and it's like we were saying, you know, you can't anticipate that the person's necessarily going to be there on the way back, so you kind of have to take the chance and go grab him earlier than you want to.
Yeah, well, getting back to the Semien thing, I'm looking up because I know that I think he got taken half as early as he was taken in the NFBC league that I'm in with Justin, because I know Justin ended up getting him in the, in this NFBC league that we're in. And the oddity of that is that if you do a bunch of mock drafts, it is surprising, you know, the value that you get in the middle infield from late players like, you know, Starlin Castro, et cetera, and so forth. So, I mean, I do see what he's Evan is pointing to about Semien. And, you know, you can look, arguably, it's one of the worst offenses in baseball. Arguably, it's one of the worst offenses in the last, you know, say 20 years of baseball that they have put together in Oakland. And so I definitely see, I see the criticism thereof of the Marcus Semien pick. And I'm still trying to get this exactly figured out, exactly where Justin got him. My page rolling slowly.
Here, I'll buy you a little bit of time here real quick, because it's very interesting when you look at how I put my team together, which I have four guys that are second base eligible. So that was kind of my plan, was to try and drain the like middle base pool, because I hear so much talk about like, oh, there's depth later. But in an OBP league, you're talking about Marcus Semien, who had a, you know, 300 on base percentage last year, 310 the year before. Starlin Castro, who's a 300 guy, doesn't take a walk. Like, these dudes are potatoes. Like, if you want to start them in a 16 team league, they're going to be a drag. And okay, hopefully you wind up elsewhere. But I think there's something to be said that you don't really want to be stuck with these guys. And that at 127, you're not being stuck with Marcus Semien. You're kind of planting your flag on him.
Yeah, there's he wound up pick 187 to Justin in the NFBC league. So there's definitely a huge discrepancy. We have a very large Marcus Semien fan within our draft. There's not much doubt about that.
Is he higher than the NFBC? I was trying to pull that up right now, than the highest he's gone.
That you said what pick did he go at?
127, I believe.
Oh, well, it won't stun me if somebody, there's a lot of NFBC drafts, so I will check his ADP right now in NFBC, and I'm right on the site. So, but anyway, I can chime in with that in a second if somebody.
I was 169. Sorry, I was pulling it up right then. So yeah, he blew that 40 picks or so. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of love for him. I mean, I do think Marcus Semien in general is a decent value where he's getting drafted, but the 40 picks earlier is definitely a big stretch.
For me, my Marcus Semien thoughts are basically that I felt he did go too early. I just can't bank on that. And yes, I understand there's just not a lot of shortstops that are out there. And so as a result of that, you may be thinking, oh, I need to do this. But I've never felt that way about Marcus Semien, that I'm like, I need to do this. I get it. There's not a ton. And that's why I was okay with taking Machado at 9, because I was like, at least if nothing else, I get my shortstop taken care of, even if I play him over at 3rd. But I still felt like, you know, I could have grabbed some other player that was later that I almost would have liked a little bit better than a Marcus Semien. But, you know, it's like Evan says, you're planting your flag right there.
which is a ballsy maneuver, to say the least. As he's not always been a defensively sound player either. And the A's are an odd ship to jump aboard at this point. My feelings about how Billy Beane oversees the baseball operations are well known at this point.
My other thought, I had another thought. I really did, guys, I promise. it was brought up in our chat about some of the other players that were just recently drafted. Now I know that Evan had briefly touched upon this, but what are your thoughts on Dexter Fowler at 153 and Kevin Gausman at 150 overall?
Well, I think Gausman displays exactly what I was speaking about earlier, is that he's got the skills to be a good pitcher, but we don't know how quickly he's going to come along. and he was still prone to some blow-up innings last year, and he's in a really tough division to pitch in a really tough park. So the fact that he's going at 150, it fully displays my concerns about the depth in the middle tier of pitching as far as being able to get reliability. I'm a guy like you did. I've got a lot of risk built into my staff. You know, I started with Yu Darvish, so that'll tell you that if he's my ace, you know, which is not unthinkable in a 16-team league, but if he's my ace, I would like some middle-tier reliability, and I don't think a guy like Kevin Gausman is who you want to look for reliability. But just to show you, I mean, it was at six picks earlier, I took Jameson Taillon. Well, he's not exactly reliable either, but at least he's pitching in Pittsburgh, you know, in a division that I think, you know, and in a ballpark where I think, you know, it's going to limit the damages. I mean, if Kevin Gausman, the array of outcomes for Kevin Gausman this year is like unthinkable. He could pitch to a 3.3 ERA, or he could pitch to a 5.6 ERA, and I don't really think anyone would be stunned by it. And other guys like Sean Manaea, Blake Snell, these guys that are going in this middle tier, I mean, the array of outcomes is ridiculously wide, and that kind of spooks me because I'm not that much – I don't enjoy that much risk involved in a pick that's in, you know, the top 10 rounds of a draft. As far as Dexter Fowler goes, when I look at the landscape of outfield right now, I know we already touched on how outfield has really been stressed within the drafters in this league. I think I can get aboard with the Dexter Fowler pick because he is the epitome of what you don't have in starting pitching. He is the epitome of a guy who's very unlikely to hurt you in any category. You just pray that you get, you know, upward of his career average. I mean, if you got 135, 140 games of Dexter Fowler leading off for the Cardinals, I think you would be you'd be pretty happy with that pick there. I like that pick a lot.
I like the Dexter Fowler pick a lot as well because he does get on base, and he's a very good outfielder for this type of situation, and he's Justin's third outfielder. He goes with Yelich, Kane as well. So I think for a third outfielder, getting Dexter Fowler is a very good pick at that spot. In terms of Kevin Gausman, he's the fourth pitcher out of nine that's taken by Evan to go along with O, Giles, and Lester. Not in that exact order, but...
Well, Evil Evan, not me.
Sorry, good Evan. You're bad Evan.
Oh, in my draft software, I have the other Evan labeled as Evil Evan, since I am simply known as me. So that's how I've been referring to him as.
You're wrong. Just so you know, but you're wrong. It's okay. It happens every podcast that you're wrong, but it's okay. We keep you around because you're entertaining.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
But I think for a fourth overall pitcher, I still think that it's a little risky to bank on Gausman's upside, but I can see it. I personally wouldn't do it, especially because who knows what will happen with Giles and with O and with Lester. Lester is due for some regression. He had just such a good season last year in terms of BABIP. O, I want to see how he does in the full season as the closer. I would assume he does well, but I just would like to see it. Giles can have ups and downs, and so can Gausman. So there's going to be potential in this lineup or in this pitching rotation. It just depends on how it all falls.
Yeah, real quick, love Dexter Fowler, audibly cursed when I saw the pick. If you're talking roto and you want guys that kind of do everything, I mean, Fowler's, you know, 15-15, awesome walk rate, you know, he's going to be a pretty good player in this format. As far as Kevin Gausman, home run issues, I mean, he was actually better if you look, you know, overall, but I just don't know. Compared to this run that I wanted to talk about that I thought happened a little bit early of like the Matt Harvey, Felix Hernandez, Kenta Maeda range, and I think he can kind of get tossed in there. Also, Rich Hill, Marcus Stroman, other players that kind of went in that range. I mean, I wanted to play around in that range. I was at 130, and this all kind of started right around pick 112, and I only have Steven Strasburg and Wade Davis. Like, I need some pitching on my team, but I think people are kind of wanting to hop into this late pool, considering the run on aces that I think is going to happen. So I don't know that Kevin Gausman is amazing at 150, but I just really like this range of pitchers, if you will.
Chuck, did you have any other points about the draft, or Evan, did you have any points about the draft?
I do want to speak a little bit about catching. You know, it's so tough because there is definitely a clear top four or five catchers, but then you got to start questioning how much value you get out of the catching after that, because the position was so putrid last year. Maybe a low point even amongst catching of the last 15 years of fantasy baseball. So if if you're not a Salvador Perez guy, some of these guys that are sprinkled, and when I say sprinkled, they're spread out amongst the mid tier of drafting where we are right now. If you're not a fan of those guys, I find it very easy to sort of punt catching and just assume, maybe I'm gonna hit on a really late catcher. A lot of people like Travis d'Arnaud, for at least, as much as he plays, he used to be a huge prospect. Travis d'Arnaud, the Wellington Castillo, if he gets enough playing time, the Colorado catchers, these guys that are not highly touted, how much difference is there going to be between them and these catchers in the middle tier? And do you feel like you get more value out of drafting the other positions first and then taking an endgame flyer on this, this James McCann sort of area of catching? I was stunned. Yasmani Grandal, somebody will look it up. I was stunned that Yasmani Grandal went as early as he did, since he's not really an OBP guy. So
what? Okay, hang on. Being the guy that drafted Yasmani Grandal at 125. Okay, it was way better than your Real Muto pick at 120. I'll just go ahead and say that. I took.
To be fair, if you take last year's batting averages, Real Muto had a better OBP than Yasmani Grandal. Now, to be fair, Grandal as an average is a total waste, but he took 64 walks last year. He had an OBP at 339. Real Muto took 28 walks and had an OBP of 343. So they're right in the same ballpark. So, yes, that's me banking a little bit on the average and not so much on the walks, and you banking on the walks and saying okay, that he has no improvement on the average. So I still think it's a good pick. I was not a big fan of him, as I discussed yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know how you can't say that.
He's not an OBP guy is a little nuts.
Is a little nuts because he's got a 348 career OBP. He's got a 14.2% walk rate. I've heard there's work that he's been doing hitting right-handed this offseason. So he's kind of trying to work out his lefty issues. And I was going to talk about Real Muto and the steals and the little side conversation we were having that Matt said people want to treat his 10 steals like they're 30 at the catching position.
I mean, I get it, and like I discussed, I said, if he gets five, I'm okay with five, because most other catchers probably aren't getting the five steals, and he's like, well, that's only five. I'm like, five is so better than zero when I have no one else who's really getting me a ton of steals at this point. I can't bank on Machado going back and getting steals, can't bank on Cespedes or Martinez getting a ton of steals. I don't really have a steals guy, so it's kind of sad to say that Real Muto could be my best steal guy at this point in the draft, and I have to worry a little bit about that. But let me ask you a quick question. Who do you think the catcher with the most walks last year was? Either of you.
Buster Posey? Not Salvador Perez, which I don't know why you were talking about people wanting Salvador Perez. He's garbage in an OBP league, but go ahead.
I will say Jonathan Lucroy.
Okay. Probably be wrong. It was a three-way tie last year between Russell Martin at 64, Buster Posey at 64, and Yasmani Grandal at 64. Next closest was Cervelli at 56. So yeah, that would have been my second guess. That's not saying that Grandal is a good OBP catcher. I really don't know what it is, considering how his average last year was 238. 228. and he was 110 points higher in an OBP. You can't really ask for much more than that in an OBP type league. So no, for
the you guys are definitely right to jump on the fact that I didn't realize that Grandal had walked as much as he did. But in defense of me claiming that there's some risk involved, I would like Evan to compute what the average games played per season has been for Yasmani Grandal over the last 5 years, because he's had concussion, ankle, knee, performance.
I would say it's probably right around 120 games, maybe.
Yeah, over the past 3 years, it's been 120, and then 2012 he played 60, and 2013 he played 28. But over the past 3 years, he's played 115 games or more.
Wait for me. And I talked about this yesterday. The reason I don't like Grandal is because I can't trust him to ever stay healthy. And not that I can necessarily trust Real Muto to stay healthy, but I didn't trust Grandal 100%, even though I knew he took a lot of walks and had a lot of power. I could not get behind him 100%. And that was with me knowing all of that information. So that's the reason I had taken Real Muto there.
Yeah,
for what it's worth, Grandal's ADP on NFBC is 145. So you know you're within 20 picks.
Well, like, I just knew obviously. He wasn't coming back to me. That was it, and yeah. I was kind of staring at it down the draft. Where was I? I was going into the turn, so I only had about 8 picks, but I don't think anybody else had a catcher behind me. Matt said that he wanted Grandal, although he said he was Grandal's biggest fan. He took Gattis right after I did. But I just didn't think there was a way he was coming back, especially since we're at that wheel, and in a 16-team league, you're looking at 30 picks before it comes back to you, and you don't know what the catcher landscape is going to look like down in the 120s.
Well, you know, this is actually the question that I was getting to when I pointed out the stuff about catcher, is that you have to decide, you know, the quality of the investment and how much you value potentially having more from your catchers than other people. But is that better off than the combination of a catcher you'd get later and the best player you could draft at the time that you drafted them? You know, you're looking at, you know, like a guy like Steven Piscotty, and a guy like, a guy like Steven Piscotty going after him, who's going to be good in every category, basically, you know, even offers a little bit of, in the steal category, but is also going to be a guy who hits in the middle of a lineup. He's going to have a better chance to score runs. Is that value plus a later catcher worth more than a guy like Grandal, who probably, you know, gets a boost in this format for sure? A guy like Grandal and who you would get, you know, later when you would take that catcher is the hard game to play to me. And that's why, you know, I'm ending up punting catcher. And if I hit on a couple late game surprises, I think I will really cut into the amount of, into the amount that I get out of my full team by being able to draft players like Piscotty instead of a player like Grandal, who's obviously got some flaws, but within where he was taken as a catcher makes perfect sense. So do you see the disparity that I'm getting at?
No.
You got to remember that they're always going to play less games than everyone else because they're going to take Sundays off, you know, basically every Sunday, you know? So, I mean, you know, the you're going to get less, you get less bang for your buck within the position.
Understandable. Yeah.
You know, same thing we used to say about Maurer. He had a great batting average. Well, yeah, he had less at bats than everyone too. So it didn't help you as much as you think. You know, his 320 is different than a regular's 320 who misses one Sunday a month versus a guy who misses every Sunday every month.
What I understand that there's the injury risk with Grandal, but in a first catcher for me, what I would be wanting to look at is a guy that's going to, you know, probably get, you know, a 340 OBP and my best bet to hit 25 home runs at this point in the draft. Like that's the, you know, the gamble that I needed to take. And just, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to get to make my pick on the air. I'm up in 2 picks. One of the other guys that I was looking around with, so you're talking about Piscotty or whatnot. I had Dexter Fowler and somebody who is hopefully going to end up on my team in Jock Peterson that I thought would be able to fall if I did hop up and take Grandal where I did. So it was Grandal plus one of these guys, or it's that guy that I took, you know, at 127, whoever it might have been, and the catcher I got later, and I just made my decision there. So
and I don't really I don't mean this as an attack on the pick. I mean it as, you know, a thought or a philosophy within the draft.
No, that's hard to decide.
I don't have anything per se against the Grandal pick. It's just you get a disparity as the draft goes along where you're going to take a catcher. Like if somebody jumps up now and takes the catcher we don't like from Kansas City, okay? If you take that guy, you know you're not taking as good a player as you could get, but you're taking him because he's a catcher. And at what point does that, you know, is that risk reward not worth it anymore? To me, is the philosophical question that I'm trying to pose. That's not easy to answer because you don't know what you could get out of a later catcher necessarily because they develop so weird to begin with. And you don't always know what you can get out of a current catcher because they're going to play less games by the nature of the position in and of itself.
I just think Grandal is going to start most games against righties. And I, you know, as far as resting him, I think, you know, you'll be able to know where to pick your spots. Like it's okay. I'm okay with it. And it's okay to have, you know, differing opinions. And that's why, you know, we have, you know, people absolutely tearing apart like Werner's Nelson Cruz pick at, what was it, 19th overall or something
why
like that.
Why are you guys stealing my draft surprises?
Well, because I didn't know that we would get to it. And I just wanted to make sure that we touched on it because
he get did, to it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, he got 5 down votes. He went 0-for-5. People hated that pick. He went before Charlie Blackmon and Starling Marte. Me and Mike did the Mariners preview with Tejol, which you should go back and listen to for other reasons other than the fantasy advice. But yeah, we talked a lot about Nelson Cruz, and I'm a big believer, especially, I mean, like I said, second round pick in a 16-team league. Like as a top 30 guy, I'm down with Nelson Cruz.
Well, his OBP, Nelson Cruz's OBP is 41. And the highest he was taken in any NFBC draft was 23. So, but the weird thing is that I picked right before the Nelson Cruz pick. That's where I took Freeman. And I sat and I thought to myself, well, you know, who is the purest basher that's not going to kill me in OBP that's left on the board? And I seriously thought about taking Cruz the pick before he went. So that made me a little less surprised than other people because I could see what he was thinking, despite the fact that it just seems I couldn't pull the trigger on it because I'm just like, I can't take a guy this old, you know, a guy this old, this early is kind of what was going through my head, which might not be a sensible way to look at it because Nelson Cruz has been really good, but you worry about old players hitting a cliff. And I just thought, boy, if I took him, I was going to have to take him at, you know, pick 16, and that just seemed like it was, pick 17 or pick 18 or whatever. And that was really tough for me to be able to do. So,
but yeah, I agree with the Cruz pick. That was one of my surprises. I get it. He's a good OBP player and he hits 40 home runs, but I don't know if I could have taken him in the top 20. I still think he could have made it at least another round without having to take him. But to be fair, with Mike Werner at pick 14 and it's on the way back, you know, I really can understand how he understands that he's not grabbing him for another 28 picks, so the likelihood that he's there is pretty slim. So I do understand it. It's just that's the problem with these massive leagues, that you have to take someone way too early if you know for a fact they're not going to make it back to you on the back-to-back snake. So I can understand it, but I'm just still surprised.
That's definitely what happened when I took Freeman before I took right before Nelson Cruz went. I definitely said, you know, who's the first baseman that I want? And am I willing to get stuck at first when I'm in the middle of an NFBC draft where I chased first base the whole time? Yeah. And so that's kind of what played off. But with me never thinking that Murphy was going to make it back to me in the third, which we already discussed. So I certainly understand the intrigue. That it was a different pick. And remember that when Mike Werner took Nelson Cruz, that means he took Nelson Cruz And then he took Polanco in the very next round. So he already had an outfielder when he took Polanco in front of Daniel Murphy, which is, you know, just a kind of an interesting aside mm-hmm. that links two conversations we've had together.
Well, he did have a first baseman. He took E5 at 14th overall, which I actually, you know, kind of liked as a pick, especially given that first base run. But yeah, that was a little interesting seeing that he did go Cruz Polanco.
Yeah, and he could have, remember, he could have used Murphy at second.
Right, so, absolutely. Yeah. Which would have helped, as I own every second baseman in the world.
A couple of my other surprises was that Gary Sanchez was the first catcher off the board, and that yep. Buster Posey ended up going third. Now, I can understand that the upside of Sanchez, but the small sample size of not even being a full season, is it kind of makes it tough for me to get behind taking him as the first catcher off the board. And then I had a couple other surprises. Kutch falling all the way to 61, and David Dahl going at 84. Now, we've come to find out that David Dahl's injury is worse than what it actually is, but I'm just a little bit surprised with both of those moves. What are your guys' thoughts, Chuck?
Well, I was pretty surprised about McCutcheon falling, especially amongst the outfield run that we've been talking about. And I have been completely on board and trying to figure out how the Rockies are going to use all the outfielders on their roster to begin with. And then you add Raimel Tapia as being the, you know, their sort of top prospect who's knocking on the door of playing as well.
And Jordan Patterson.
Yeah. I mean, and they're all, I mean, most of the majority of them are left-handed. You know, you got Charlie Blackman, you got Gerardo Parra, you got David Dahl, you got Tapia. And these guys are all left. Yeah. They're all lefties. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it just, it makes it hard to see how it's all going to fall out. So I've been battering people for taking David Dahl at his ADP, which is, you know, within the top 100, but not 84. And as far as, you know, McCutcheon goes, it just seemed like he's a guy that people would be on to bounce back, because, you know, I took Jose Bautista because I was in desperate mode for outfield and praying for a bounce back. But it's hard. It's unusual that people get off the train so fast on some of these guys that have been perennially very good. And I think you know, a combination of Bautista and you know, there's a Carlos Gomez tie-in at later points. But these guys who have been really good to fantasy players for years usually become pretty reliable fallback options. And people are jumping off the train earlier than they used to, you know, 5 or 6 years back.
What are your thoughts, Evan?
Well, I mean, I was kind of looking at it because I really did want Andrew McCutcheon, and I knew there was no way he was going to be coming back to me on that turn, but I said a prayer. I needed to grab a pitcher. I took Steven Strasburg one pick before, but looking how it could have played out. So I took Ryan Braun the round before, so I went Braun, Strasburg. If I would have known I could have gotten, you know, you, Darvish, and Andrew McCutcheon, I think I probably would have gone that way. So living, you know, learn. But I do really like McCutcheon, especially in OBP league. And like Chuck was talking about Jose Bautista. Bautista, you know, in a league this size, probably would have been a first round pick last year, especially given the OBP. There's injury concerns. He old, but I mean, I do think that 82 for him in a league with, you know, these format settings, I think was a really good pick. And I was surprised you got a downvote on that. Oh, probably somebody that got sniped or something along those lines. And yeah, so I think you're right on about people that, you know, jump and ship on. Even a guy like, you know, a Justin Upton, which, you know, you want to talk about head-to-head roto leagues versus overall roto leagues. Upton's a streaky guy. He'll kill you in weekly, you know, head-to-head leagues. But in a league like this where you can kind of just bank him over the season, I think getting him at 78 was a good Werner pick. And that was yet another outfielder for Mike.
Yeah, Justin Upton is one of those guys where you put him in your lineup and you know that by the end of the year he's going to be somewhere around 30 home runs. It's just he's just as likely to hit two in a month as he is to hit 12 or 13, which is where the frustration comes in weekly, you know, in weekly head-to-head formats, obviously. But at the same time, he's another guy that you know, people think he's really, really old, and he's only like 31. So he's not as old, you know, he's not as old as people think. And he's a guy that can carry your offense for months at a time, which is not very easy to find where he's going as deep in the draft as he's going. So, and I shouldn't be on it. I shouldn't be the conductor on his train or anything, because somehow or another, I very rarely end up with him. So, I do think it's a quality pick that other people make for what it's worth.
Did you guys have any other overall surprises in the draft, Evan?
No, I think that pretty much hit everything for me. And I mean, we're only, you know, like we said, in round 10 of this monster draft, and already the pools are looking a little thin. So it's going to be a fun one for sure.
What about you, Chuck?
Yeah, no, you know, overall, I think one more thing that I see is I see a huge disparity between when we did a mock draft earlier in the off season, and now, you know, we have some jelly beans on the line, even though they're not many. It just seems like everything in the mock draft fell pretty common, and now everything, you know, 2 months later, seems to be pretty ramshackle, pretty off the cuff. People willing to take severe gambles when, and I think some part of it is the buy-in size. When there's few, you know, there's only a few jelly beans on the line. If the more jelly beans that are on the line, I think the more risk averse that people get. And we've seen people take tremendous amounts of risk in this league so far. That would be one thing I would say for sure.
Why don't we move into the last part of our podcast, and that's going to be talking about which team we like the best that's not our own. So, Chuck, why don't you take us and start us off?
Oh, you can't do this to me because I'm between two people. Go to me last, if you don't mind.
Okay. Chuck, let's go back to you. No, Evan, you can give us a pick.
Aww. Well,
are we literally all between two people?
No, I mean, there are two that I like, but I'll just hit him real quick. I really love Matt's team. He sniped the shit out of me on a few go-rounds here. He was the one that got Goldie before I took Chris Bryant, and I got negative votes for taking the reigning NL MVP. Get out of town. Hush. But yeah, he took McCutcheon. He's got Gattis. Carpenter, I like. Story, it's all right. Crush, Chris Davis, I really liked him getting. He's got Garrett Cole, Kyle Hendricks, and Rich Hill for pitching staff. So he's 1-for-3 on guys that I like. The other team that I really liked was Eli, who is on the other side of me. He's got Altuve, Bogarts, Kyle Seager. LeMahieu was the only pick that, I mean, I understood it at where he got him. He's got Springer, Eaton, and then for his pitching, he's got Carlos Carrasco, Quintana, and Andrew Miller, which I really like. So, yeah, everybody around me is taking all the good players.
For me, I really do like Matt's team. The two picks I like the least are Trevor Story and Gattis. I'm not a Gattis fan. I just want to see how Trevor Story comes back from the injury and see if he is able to duplicate what he did last year. But I still think it's a solid pick. Everyone else, I'm a big fan of. I'm a massive Rich Hill fan, as you guys have probably heard me at some point during the offseason. I mean, the dude's like a top 20 pitcher when he's healthy. He's just healthy for potentially 10 to 20 starts a season. That's about it. I really do like Eli's team as well. Considering that both him and Matt are nowhere near me, really, in terms of draft position, I really do like it because I like how his pitching rotation is. I like what his upside brings, and he's got a lot of speed that has good power potential as well. The team that I probably like the most overall is Justin Mason's. Justin has Jose Abreu, which I'm not a massive fan of, but he's got VR, Frazier, Yelich, Kane, Fowler. And then his pitching rotation, which I really like, is Aaron Sanchez, Danny Salazar, Clayton Kershaw, and Aroldis Chapman. So for me, I think that Justin, who's picking one pick before me and has sniped me a couple of times, and he and I draft very similarly in terms of overall players, except for that I don't punt average, but considering we're in OBP, it doesn't really matter. That's why he has a team that looks very similar to one that I would most likely have. And that's why I've debated on two different players, and four of the times, Justin has taken them one pick after me. What about you, Chuck?
Well, by far my favorite team in the league overall is Ben Briggs' team. Good
I
Ben.
You were going to say me. Oh my God.
No,
you
no, good,
totally
good Ben.
Teased me.
He took Miguel Cabrera in the first round over Joey Votto, which I might not have done. But at the same time, you know, the upside and the quality of the players, the hitters that he has, I really like, because he's got Miguel Cabrera, Charlie Blackman. He got at a good price after his ADP. He got in on the outfielder run with Giancarlo Stanton. But I like Justin Verlander a lot in this kind of a format with between the quality starts and the fact that he's probably the most likely guy to pitch well over 200 innings. They lean on him really hard. So, you know, he made some late picks that I like too. He got Ian Kinsler, who seems to always fall further than he should in almost every format. You know, Adrian Beltre and Mikel Franco. He's got third base more than covered. So, you know, his only pitching right now is Verlander and Fulmer. So he's going to have to play some catch up with closers later. But Ben Briggs would be my pick to be the team that I like most. There's a lot of other teams that I like that took, you know, like the poor guy who got stuck. He drafted David Price right before the injury came out. I feel bad for him. And then, you know, the guy with David Dahl, the injury, you know, his pick got made worse. That was Rhett Soderberg. So, but Ben Briggs would be my pick to have the team that I like the most. So,
all right, guys, anything else to add in terms of anything else with this draft or any other draft concerns for our listeners?
I was just going to say, I didn't know if you wanted to because none of us like each other as the highest team. So I didn't know if you guys wanted to make any comments about your team or what you like, what you didn't like.
Well, let's see. Evan, I like your team, but
no, that's not what I was going for.
No, I know. But I'm just saying, like, for obviously, like, I like my team because I think that I have, like, for Mets. What'd you say? I'm sorry?
Because you have Mets on your team?
No, it's not just that. I just think I have a good blend of people for the infield, people for the outfield, and pitchers that give me all the categories. The thing that I'm lacking the most is steals, basically. And it's not that I can make steals up, but I can at least go try to grab an outfielder or someone that can give me some steals later on as like you know, as a potential option. Or I could just totally tank it for the entire season, which won't really help me win, and I'll just have to trade for it. But I like my team. I mean, overall, I do like both of your guys' teams.
I really like Chuck's team. That's where I kind of wanted to go with it, because I know he thinks he's a little pitching heavy with you, Darvish, Carlos Martinez. But I love his rotation, and it's half the game. And it's, I mean, if you want to talk about Taillon in a short time in the league, I mean, he's going to keep your ratios down on some of these late guys that are going to get drafted in a 16-team league. Maeda, I think, in a quality starts league is going to, you know, kind of meet the bare criteria, if you will. So I think he's a good play. And Carlos Martinez, I think, is a great, you know, number two pitcher, if you want to call him that, in this rotation that you've built.
I really do. I like Chuck's infield and I like Chuck's pitching. The outfield, I like Bautista. I'm not entirely behind Gomez. But I mean, the fact that he still has to fail three other outfielders and two catchers makes it a little tough. But that's what you run into when you go with a lot of good infielders and a lot of good pitching. You're going to leave spots that you just can't get everyone, and that's the point of a big league. You can't fill every spot in the draft. You have to be able to work after the draft as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I do like Evan's team a great deal. Naturally, since I have four pitchers, four starting pitchers, and, you know, he has one, it's a little hard for me. I feel more risk averse than he does in what's left in the starting pitching pool, and that's gone into a lot of why I've tried to take you know, some of these top 50 type pitchers that I like, because I don't trust the gambles late, which is kind of into the comments that I've made in the podcast. But as far as the players that he's picked, I mean, I love the Chris Bryant, Robinson Cano, Ryan Braun. You know, he got Gene Segura at good value, Jason Kipnis at good value. You know, Yasmani Grandal is a nice anchor at catcher in this format. So overall, I really did like Evan's team. And, you know, I think these are all top tier teams within the league. I think we went in with theories, and these theories have kind of played out well, because Ben's team is pretty solid as well.
Mm-hmm.
I like the concept. It's hard for me to fathom, since I only have two outfielders, and mine are kind of borderline. You know, he's got JD Martinez, Jonas Cespedes, and Jackie Bradley already at this point, which seems like an awfully big nicety. And his value that he got on Anthony Rendon, as deep in the league, as he got him, a round after Hanley Ramirez, a round, a full round basically after Alex Bregman. I really think Ben maxed out some really nice values on his picks as well. I'll be surprised if all three of us don't finish towards the top of the league by the time it's all said and done, actually.
Why don't we give our listeners our Twitter handles and tell them what we're working on, Evan?
At EasyEv3, I'll tweet out the link to this draft so you can follow along while you're listening to the podcast, and I'll probably tweet out another poll harassing Ben, and that's what I'll be up to until we talk baseball next week.
And what about you, Chuck?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It, and I'm doing a sort of back to basics covering various draft strategies and in season play maneuvers that I think should be appearing on the site here by the end of the week that I think people will find pretty interesting. Sometimes you go back to the basics and you kind of learn something, or you think about it differently, like how much of the different strategies play into your overall draft strategy kind of thing. Plus, I mean, we're baseball nerds, so we cover so much advanced stuff. Sometimes I think it's good to have sort of a back-to-the-basics piece. So that's what I've been working on, and I've got two slow drafts going on right now. So that is definitely nerve-wracking, trying to figure out when you're actually going to start making picks, because my NFBC is really slowed down, and I fear that late in this draft is going to slow down a great deal as well.
And for me, I am at BBrandsFWFB. I currently host our Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast. Eric Mackey joins me on that. Outside of this, I really am not doing much in terms of baseball until the season starts, and then I will be doing some writing. But I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to seeing how the rest of this draft goes. I'm sure we'll still be doing it by the time we're podcasting next at this rate, so we'll be able to talk about it again. So until next time, for everyone that's entering draft season, have a great baseball season. Fall.